That's the man who is eternally young, the great Tom Jones, with Lord Help. It's from his 39th studio album, Praise and Blame, a gospel and blues album that was released in July 2010. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is our first program of the new year. I hope the old year you kind of coasted through it into the new year, and you took it easy, and you rested up, and you surrounded yourselves with people who add positive dimension to your life. And here we are with each other, and we are blessed to be with each other once again. Well, I hear the noise of the landscapers. They love me. They absolutely love me. They choose exactly at this time to start getting the landscaping done, and it's going to be a while before they're through. Well, how do we start this year? We start this year with trouble at the border. We see that the U.S. troops are firing now on migrants at the Mexico border in Tijuana, and now they're firing tear gas, and one wonders if it's only a matter of time before they start firing live ammunition. This is a pretty serious development. We know that the border issue is a major issue, but it is really jarring to see that the way that the U.S. continues to respond, which is violently, with tear gas, knowing that there are so many children, women and children, among the group trying to just get themselves sorted out at the border. And tear gas is a chemical agent, and we have to wonder what is the intention here, except that the United States has made it plain. This is probably just the first step in an escalation of attacks on the migrant groups. So it raises the question just the same, and this is something we have to talk about. This border wall is one thing, but the attitude toward immigration and immigrants is the larger picture here. Why would the United States it continues to flout the law, but it's playing a very interesting game, Trump and his administration. And that is, they're telling us that the problem is migrants. The problem is people wanting to come to the United States. And we know that other groups are not similarly regarded. when there is a problem, quote unquote, with migrants or would-be immigrants, it's usually people of color. And here we have a scenario that hasn't really been dealt with. And Trump is using it to great advantage to convey to his base and to his base outside of the United States that he's a strong man. He is going to get his way no matter what. This wall is going to go up. It was a wall, then it was slats, then it was a barrier. They're changing the wording of it. And then, of course, he says, well, what's the trouble with the wall? The wall is about ensuring security. The wall is the same concept that Barack Obama has by building a 10-foot wall around his home. And, of course, there is no such wall around Barack Obama's home. Yet another lie, but the media are running it as if it were true. But coming back to this question of immigration, we do not have a cogent immigration policy, and that has been the case for quite some time. Immigration is a very political thing. We don't know why some people have more relaxed. You know, people like people from Slovenia, for example. I'm referring to the president's wife, who came to the United States on a very interesting visa, and it was called the Einstein visa. It's a special kind of visa awarded people who are coming from countries where although they are contributing to the advancement of the world at large in their particular fields of endeavor, still are suffering and constrained in their work. That's the visa she is here on. And despite the fact that the president talks all the time about being against chain migration, which means first a member of the family comes and then that member of the family brings in other members, because Melania Trump is here, then her father comes and then her mother comes. Now, that was not a problem. So we have three instances where visas were granted to the wife of the president, a special kind of visa for which we don't even have to discuss whether she qualifies for an Einstein visa, but both her parents are here, and it didn't take long for them to be granted visas. So we have to take a look now at what is supposed to be conveyed with the ramping up of attacks on migrants. Look at the border, looking to take advantage, really, of their rights. And as would-be immigrants, as migrants, they are entitled to apply. They're entitled to apply. What Trump has been successful in doing is flouting international law. They can't even get to a processing center to apply for their special visas and immigration visas. They're closing down these centers, which is really against the law because it's denying or preventing people from just getting access. Secondly, Trump is creating a major problem for Mexico, and that was his intention. And the intention is that because these people cannot get to processing centers, which by law, they're supposed to be there, and they're supposed to receive people wishing to make the case for immigration because of conditions in their homeland, economic, some are under direct threat of violence, some have suffered a lot in terms of poverty, and some are just on a basic human rights grounds. They could make a very good case, but they're not being allowed. Trump is shutting down the processing centers. They cannot get into the United States if they cannot get to a processing center. And these processing centers are designated along the border for people coming from Central and South America. So now there is this backlog that Trump has created in order to create a crisis for Mexico. And the crisis is that Mexico doesn't have the resources to cope with the enormity of this problem. Now, if people were able to file for immigration, they would be able, you know, if the flow were constant, you'd see a great relief, because, you know, the reception areas would be receiving people on a constant and consistent basis. But that is the Trump administration has just shut that down, creating a huge backup. And these people are now in Mexico. So Trump had openly said, if you remember, he said some time ago, let Mexico deal with it. Let Mexico take care of that problem. And Mexico will now have to host these people who are constantly coming and not having access to the processing centers that they should be having access to. So it creates a massive problem for Mexico. And we're seeing the spillover effect. There have been clashes, violent clashes. People have been killed, because people are seeing, Mexicans are now seeing the problem as, well, wait a minute, how are we going to cope, especially in these border towns where the people coming from Central and South America are amassing? So this is a problem, and it will continue to be a big problem, but there is a deliberate effort by Trump and his administration to create a crisis. The thing is that at this time, you don't see alternative plans. Not too many. There are a couple, but there are not too many plans by countries in Central and South America, where many of the migrants are coming from, to deal with the problem. One such solution was that money would be pumped into Central and South American countries where the migrants are coming from, to alleviate the economic stress in those countries, and hopefully that would entice the migrants to stay put for a while. But the estimated cost would be something like $30 billion, and they don't have that kind of money ready. So they're looking to the international community to chip in. The issue of migrants is a worldwide issue. So Trump is doing massive damage here. One, flouting international law by refusing, shutting down the processing centers and making it impossible for these particular migrants to get to these centers where they can file for refugee status. So they have no immediate physical access. You have the problem of the administration still holding on to children who were separated from their parents. We've seen in just the last week the deaths of two children, and it seems not to be causing much concern. You know, the children are in camps, or they are with groups of migrants, and there's a genuine concern about health issues, as there would be in any situation where you have masses of people in the same place. It's the same concern that people have in the United States, health officials have, about the transmission of diseases, simply because people are concentrated and packed together, and therefore it's very much easier for, you know, these germs and these diseases to spread. So we see that problem still has not been solved, and there seems to be no intention. So the administration is actually holding these children hostage. To me, that is a crime. The U.S. government essentially has kidnapped children and keeping them hostage. This is a hostage situation, and it shouldn't be seen as anything but. It's a hostage situation. They still are not processing these applications of the parents of these children in a timely fashion. They have the children and their parents under very unpleasant conditions, living in heat, living in circumstances that where sanitation is an issue, where the possibility of diseases being transmitted one to another because of close proximity, that's another issue. And now we have the compounding, and this is the evil. There's no other word for it. This is the evil of the Trump administration, to now force them, to bottle them, to bottleneck them into and stop them at Mexico, at the Mexican border. And in several towns along the Mexican border that used to have these processing centers, which do not exist anymore, they've been shut down, we have people still believing, because this is what they've been told, that pretty soon the U.S. government will solve the problem. But in the meantime, you know, they're just going to have to figure out a solution for themselves. And they've left it to Mexico to play host to all of these people suddenly showing up within its borders. But the people are not interested in going to Mexico. The passage route is through Mexico. But Trump has seen to it that they're bottlenecked there. It's creating major problems for Mexico. And the solution that looks plausible at the moment is to, from these Central American countries where the migrants are coming from, the vast majority of them are coming from, the economies of those countries are so bad. And the violence and the conditions of life are so bad that they actually are gambling that the decision that they've made to leave it, to leave those countries, is really worth the gamble. So now, all around, it looks really grim. But in the middle of all of that, with the Central and South American countries trying to find a way to get some money and pump it back into the economies of these countries that the migrants are coming from, that's a long process. And it requires some major logistical change. It's not going to happen quickly. And Trump is having a blast. Oh, he loves it. He's showing the world what a jerk he is. He's showing the world what a strong man he is. He doesn't care how many people die. He doesn't care about actually ignoring international law. And he's gotten away with it because Congress has done very little or close to nothing in challenging him. on this matter, and I believe a good case could be made not only about breaking U.S. treaties with these countries and U.S. Commitments under the international laws that it has committed to abiding by, humanitarian laws, but we have criminal laws, U.S. law itself. This government, and we should be clear about it, has been engaging in these past several months in taking hostages, making these migrants hostages, which is a criminal offense in my view. And I am hoping that some group of lawyers, international group of lawyers, would challenge the United States in international court on this question. You're separating mothers from their children in the same way that they did it in Nazi Germany. You're causing, and you don't care, you do not have the facilities to keep these people in transit and stationary in unpleasant and inhumane conditions. You're holding people's children against their will. And now we have the president saying he has authorized the military stationed along the border to use lethal weapons if they have to. But the first taste came this weekend when they began firing tear gas, they began firing. But what is interesting is they're firing the tear gas into Mexico. They're not firing tear gas on U.S. soil, although it is wafting across the border with the wind. The wind is driving the tear gas into U.S. territory. But the tear gas really is being fired into Mexico, which I consider not unlike an act of war. These are chemical weapons. You have women and children, for the most part, being targeted, although the explanation is that they're targeting people who are throwing rocks. You know, we've gotten that explanation from Israel to justify the slaughter of Palestinians. And here we have it. And we haven't heard a peep. We haven't heard a peep out of all of these politicians who should be really clear that this is as dangerous as the war in Yemen or Afghanistan or any other kind of war. This is how it starts. And they are counting on the fact that we are not going to care. We will say nothing. We will not block their actions. And I think we have to do something about that. And because you know how these things work. It's coming to a neighborhood, your neighborhood soon. If they tried it here in this situation, it will give them the opportunity to test all kinds of things that they're contemplating to keep, especially, quote, urban areas, unquote, under control. This is a very disturbing development. And we ought to be very concerned about it. And we ought to ask the people who say they represent us, What is it that they're doing? How could we allow this administration and this president to engage in such blatantly illegal activity that is putting the lives of innocent people at risk? And when you check it out, what is the big, what is the, at the root of it? These are migrants. So therefore what? They're useless? They're not human? We shouldn't care what happens to them? It's the same attitude that we saw with Italy and the migrants coming across the straits. What do you expect migrants to do? When these major countries go into these far-flung places and wreak havoc with their countries and their ways of life and make it impossible for them to remain in their native lands, why should we be so offended that they have such a strong will to survive? Why should we be so upset about that? We have instance after instance in which predominantly white migrants, they go all over the world. And they're free to do so. There's no hassle. There's nobody saying, hey, wait a minute. You're not under duress. Why is Melania Trump here? And under what I would consider to be rather lopsided conditions. You get an Albert Einstein visa? And then your father and your mother come without a problem. And people who are seeing that their neighbors mowed down and their family members blown away in acts of war, and who can barely survive. And we should have no empathy at all for them. We should do everything in our power to hasten their deaths and demise. That's what this administration is saying and getting away with. We're almost halfway through the program. Let's take this break and then we come back to other topics which I have lined up here. We won't get through them today, but we at least make a start and they'll stay okay until tomorrow, right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're talking about things that matter. The federal government shutdown starts anew this new week, the 12th day of a government shutdown. And, you know, it's necessary because it shows how resolute the president is. He's a strong man. That's right. I don't get my wall. You don't get paid. But of course, there are people who are getting paid. His children are getting paid. Ivanka Trump is, I'm sure, getting paid as an advisor to the president. Members of Congress continue to get paid. And the president, who draws a salary, gets paid. But they are real clear that the rest of people, federal government workers, they don't need to get paid. And that, to me, is a reason for a major strike. Why? Because again, the president arbitrarily decided that this was what he was going to do. He will shut down the government until he gets his way. Well, you know, there are laws in this country. There are laws preventing people from acting like a dictator. And you can't wake up one morning and say, well, we're going to shut down the government. But, and nobody will get paid except, except my children, well-placed and well-connected friends. We make exceptions about who could still get paid. But government workers can't get paid. And so I asked the question, where the hell is the union? There should be such a coalition of union effort here, with unions coming together quickly. Sound the alarm. You cannot deny pay to people because you feel like it. They are protected. They are protected workers. At least that's what we thought. I haven't heard any of the, well, they may be talking, but I'm not hearing them about this blatant infraction of the law. We keep talking about laws, and this is the one thing that Trump is hell-bent on ignoring, laws. They're not made for him. You have workers, hundreds of thousands of them, who essentially have to go on furlough for no reason of their own. It's not like they went through the process of furlough. It's not like there was some kind of situation in place where people would volunteer or make a decision, well, because I'm a super patriot, I will agree not to get paid. I will sacrifice my salary, which is wrong, which is so, quote, un-American, unquote. And a situation like this calls for crisis reaction. Because essentially, one man decides that he's going to shut down a major sector of employment in this country, and nobody has any say about it. Then why the heck do we need unions? This should have been the second week of a massive national strike, supported internationally by unions all around the world. This is what I mean. We are weak. And we refuse to confront this devil head on. You can't do that. And people are reporting every day still, for now going into the second week, they're still reporting to their jobs for which they are not being paid. I don't have to convince you about how wrong this is. We shouldn't have to beg and plead for the labor unions to stand up. This is so wrong, so blatantly wrong. It's not like the country is in deep trouble. under the threat of imminent attack, and extraordinary measures have to be taken, and people are being asked to, you know, sacrifice a little bit of their labor, and, you know, whatever. It's not like that. It does not rise to that level. It is a mentally unstable man getting up in the morning and deciding, what can I do to be talked about? What can I do to be feared? What can I do to exploit my power? Oh, I know. I'll just shut down the government. And on the basis of that, hundreds of thousands of people, whether we are aware of it or not, are into their second week of joblessness. They are technically fired. They're furloughed until further notice. And further notice, they'll just have to wait and see. In the meantime, they have electric bills to pay. They have mortgages. They have children's tuition. They have car notes. And it is understood they just have to wait and see how it goes. No, this is your job. Members of Congress are being paid. Employees, government employees across the board should be paid. There's no major national crisis here. There is a child in the White House who's having a temper tantrum and causing people to suffer because he wants a wall. He doesn't even know what he wants. He calls it a wall. He calls it steel slats. He doesn't know what it is. But I'm going after the unions here. Trump can do and will do just as he pleases. But why are the unions not doing anything? Call a strike. This is not a joke. You can't have one man just having this much power to disturb people's lives like this at his whim. And it's not just their salaries. It's their benefits. It's their futures. It's their families. It's businesses, small neighborhood businesses. All of this is affected by the unstable person in the White House. And people are afraid to say what the situation is. And afraid to act. I guarantee you, this would not continue if the federal unions and sympathetic unions came together and said, we will not allow this president to just decide that he will violate the law, which was fought for. This was a hard-fought victory for people to have their jobs protected. Who is getting paid even as the shutdown continues? You'll find that it is not everybody making the sacrifice. And we, as citizens, we should insist. We are not going to tolerate this. I'm talking hundreds of thousands of people here. their families, their communities, and we ourselves are affected. I read today that the National Parks is complaining. National Park Service is complaining. They have what they consider to be a crisis. And what is a crisis? Although the parks, some of the national parks remain open, there's nobody to clean up the garbage and feces. Now, we would say, well, that's not a big deal. It is a big deal because that's a job. These are jobs that people have been doing. And we have the mentally ill person in the White House deciding that he can arbitrarily stop income to households being run on the strength of people's labor. So I ask once more, where is the union call for a general strike in this country to teach this president to respect labor, to respect working people, and to give those other folks who call themselves Democrats and even Republicans who say they value, they talk about American values, to stand up. Stand up to this tyrant. And all of us as citizens of this country, we should have a natural sympathy and a natural sense of outrage about this. You tell Ivanka Trump, give up her salary. That's not happening. And Jared Kushner's salary still comes to him. And even the president's salary still comes to him. And the members of Congress, their salary still comes to them. But it's the working people that they're squeezing. And they're going to use that, Trump, and you can see what the intention is, to make their lives so miserable through an unintended furlough, but it is intended. You're just going to lay these people off, you know, increase the misery index just to show the kind of power you have. Hundreds of thousands of people that have their lives disrupted. They don't even know whether they'll be called back. And here we are. I mean, we think it's just another day. What's wrong with us? What's wrong with us? So I suggest that all labor unions, all of them, but especially the federal labor unions concerned with this issue, that we ask them, what the hell is wrong with you? That you can't see a reason to take action. Because, you know, this is just round one. The next round will involve your workers. If he could do this with hundreds of thousands of people and their lives at stake, you know, it's a matter of time before he enlarges the territory. And here we are, we're sitting like schnooks, waiting to see how is it going to turn out. And we're looking to see whether Nancy Pelosi and other members of Congress? Are they going to have a good meeting with Trump? Are they going to ask him to be reasonable? We're beyond that. He is not going to be reasonable. Reasonable means he gets what he wants. And we are not his babysitters. We are not his babysitters. So to the extent that we can influence action by people who say they are in the labor union movement and people who are sympathetic to workers' rights, this is the time to jump into action. And there should be no apologies about that. So, I needed to say that because this is how we're starting the new year, you see? And people are inclined to be generous and, well, we don't want any trouble. Let's, you know, let's not make a big deal of things. Let's kind of, you know, have the old year and the spirit of Christmas still carry us through. No, that's done. That is done. We should be in fighting mode right now. All righty. Well, I got that off my chest. I want to talk about something else, and that would be just something that we have to talk about more and more. The more we talk, the better it is. There is a decision by a women's march in California to put it off. This is an outgrowth of, as you remember, the big women's march of last year. And it split off. Many people were organizing at the local level. And that was a very good thing. I was very, very praiseworthy. I found it very praiseworthy that so many women took their political power seriously and began organizing. The interesting thing about they're putting it off. They're canceling it. They're putting it off until they organize enough to achieve a very significant thing. And we have to recognize that. The organizers of this march out in California have decided that the march is overwhelmingly white. And that's not what they want. The march will be overwhelmingly white, which means that they will have to go back into the community and organize again. Now, they could very well have gone ahead with this march. It was a massive march, as you recall. And I did remark about how white it was. And other women's political organizing activities, I have remarked about how white these things have been. But it was very significant, I think, that the organizers of this march, although it was projected to be a significant march, but they themselves said it would be overwhelmingly white, and that is not what they want. So here, I will invite you to join in and comment about this development. Is this a significant development in your view? 888-874-4888. This is a progressive thing or not? Is this a convenient decision or not? Is this to basically head off any criticism, which they will get if the march turns out to be overwhelmingly white. And does it matter? What does it say that this group in California organizing a massive march decided to call it off and postpone the march until they can reach into communities that they evidently either are ignoring or are not having good footholds in, and they'll make an attempt to integrate their march? What does it say? What is the significance of this decision, in your view? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I'd love to know what you're thinking about that. Marcus from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Ms. Lee, a gracious new year. Let's make this one look like something for a change. If we're going to change things, as we have discussed, we're going to have to deal in some acid truth. And the truth is, the labor unions for 40 years have been useless. They are creatures of the Democratic Party. The union leadership almost across the board is completely corrupt. They have to be ejected by the rank and file, and we need to evolve democratic unions. If you go back and follow the teachers' strikes from last year in Charlotte, Arizona, all over, the unions in every case did everything they could to kneecap the strikes and get them to settle early. As with every other political institution in the United States, the labor unions are hopeless. They are expectation managers, like every other aspect of our political system. And the rank and file has to break itself out of its narrow consumerism and stop worrying about exclusively their contracts, and start to make a class analysis of what's happening. This is the problem. The job of the unions has been to discipline the workforce for management for at least 45 years, certainly since the end of World War II. So this also has to be changed from the bottom up. Now, in terms of the march, I live here in Madison, Wisconsin, and marching has been ineffective for at least as long as the labor unions have been corrupt. This is symbolic protest. It comes to nothing. Here in Madison, when Scott Walker got elected governor, we had what they like to call, the progressives and liberals here like to call, the Great Uprising. We basically tailgated. We had a big picnic, and we marched, and we played bagpipes, and we sang old labor songs, and no general strike happened. There was a vocal minority that tried to get people to understand that unless you translate all this potentially revolutionary energy into action, you will get beat. And Walker, they didn't do it. They voted for the mayor of Milwaukee in a recall, and they have been getting taken apart vein by vein from the Walker administration ever since. In fact, he's on his way out of office, and they're still doing it. So the labor unions are a dead end. Forget it. Until the rank and file decides to grow up and take charge of the way their lives look on a daily basis, this is going nowhere. It's just more empty symbolic protest. Your thoughts?
Well, aren't you a bit pessimistic You see no hope.
No, I don't deal in hope. I see hope as indistinguishable from prayer. The solution to any problem in human history, as far as I can tell, is get to work on it. You can hope until you're blue in the face, and hope in and of itself does no good unless you translate it into some kind of action. And if we're going up against the rich, which is the actual enemy here, they control the political systems, they control the media systems, they can buy off any institution you set up. You are going to have to organize, have a strategy and tactics. Just crying en masse with protest signs and marching around, this crazy Quaker idea that if you speak truth to power, this will have an effect. Like power doesn't know what it's doing. Speak to the people who don't know, who are powerless. Organize them. That's the project. Not more empty symbolic protest, as you rightly point out. These women are calling it off because they're worried about how it will look on the media. In other words, yes, it's a production number. It's a song and dance. It means nothing.
Great observation. And we'll have to leave it there. We'll pick up tomorrow and continue the conversation. I have several topics that we haven't touched yet. But thank you so much for your very considered opinion today. Thank you very much for calling. That brings us to the end of our program today. We will reconnect tomorrow, same bat time at 1 p.m. and same bat channel right here at PRN.FM. And thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.